You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going, whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby. Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
8 o'clock on Fridays means it's time to talk to one of our favorite people, Chris Carter of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And Football Talk on the Fan is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days. You can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. Chris, how we doing today, buddy? What's going on?
Doing great, guys. How y'all doing?
Doing all right.
Great. You notice anything?
Oh, I couldn't see the chest at first. I just saw some gold letters there. But oh, that is some great stuff over there, Doran. Adam, where did you get such fine swagger? Normally, you are not an individual who is as up on the fashion styles of today.
Yeah, a listener mailed that to Doran. I mean, how long? Like 18 months ago?
Yeah.
And it's been in the studio ever since. Months. And then because I'm incompetent at radio and I've lost a challenge here, I have to wear it today. And it sucks. But this was $4 at Gabe's. The tag was on. And I will say the one thing about this shirt that I do like is there's a bottle opener that is stitched into this sucker here. So $4 at Gabe's.
It's a sign for WVU guys.
That's right. I think we're good. And here's the thing. I'd pay $4 for a bottle opener. So if you're a Pitt fan and you want to get the shirt, I mean,
Look at you. You're trying to justify the shirt. He's trying to justify
it. Good on you, Doran. Way to go. Yes.
Chris Carter joining us.
If only I could post memes in like reality like that. Like I do my 13-9 meme like right now.
I got that saved up, that meme. Just in case something good might happen on 9-13, though, I don't feel good about it. Chris Carter joining us on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. We'll get into the Steelers, but Chris, your reaction to the mega deal between the Cowboys and the Packers, sending Micah Parsons to Green Bay for 2 first-round picks and Kenny Clark.
I was just like, there's no way Jerry Jones can be this stupid, right? And then, you know, Jerry Jones, as normal, proves me wrong. If you had to move Micah Parsons, you had to get more than 2 first-round picks from a team that already has been a lower first-round pick for the past several years. They have a franchise quarterback. They're going to be competitive. But now you're sending them the best, like, young pass rusher in the NFL, one of the best defenders in the NFL. They're definitely going to be a low first-round pick. So you essentially just got, like, at best – 2 picks in like the mid-20s for the next 2 years, and you gave up and you get Kenny Clark, you know, a good defensive tackle. But this is a Cowboys team that was built to win. Now they're paying Dak Prescott so much money, CeeDee Lamb so much money. They've signed all these other deals. None of this mattered without Micah Parsons. This would be like if the Steelers traded away Antonio Brown in the mid 2010s, and like traded him to, like, I don't know, the Patriots. It got 2 first-round picks back, and it's like, you know, those picks aren't going to be that high, and you know you're handing them to a team that's established or something like that. So I think Jerry Jones got conned. I think that he played himself with this whole process. But I urge Steelers fans who are like, why can't Omar Khan do that? I'm like, everyone relax. Like, this is a very unique situation, and Omar Khan is not spending 2 draft picks right now, when 2 first-round picks right now, when they still need to find their franchise quarterback. But if the Steelers get their quarterback in this upcoming draft, they might be in that window to make some more aggressive trades of this caliber.
So you don't think that Jerry Jones is angling to draft Arch Manning and use those picks and cut bait with Dak Prescott?
Maybe, but here's the thing. We don't know if Arch Manning's coming out this year or next year. Arch Manning's, the family's like, he ain't coming out this year. And that might be a way of them saying, like, hey, don't position yourself to tank for us, because if you're the wrong team, we're not sending your way. And we saw it with Eli back in 2004, yep. Right? So I wouldn't be shocked about that. So if Jerry Jones is trying to angle for that position, okay, fine. But I'm not sure when you look at this situation, how Micah Parsons forced his way out of town, with the way how Jerry Jones has handled things, would the Mannings want Arch to go to the Cowboys? Like, Dorn, if you had a super son right now, one of your kids was a bona fide future first round pick, and you could choose wherever you wanted to go, would you send him to the Cowboys?
I mean, Dak Prescott just did get $60 million.
Yeah, you want to get that payday.
Yeah, like, I mean, at the quarterback, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe.
Okay.
Chris, which of these college quarterbacks do you like the best? It's early. It's subject to change. We've all got opinions on these guys, all these potential first-round picks. But who among that group will you be keeping a special eye on this weekend and then through the season?
There's like a group of like four or five guys. I really like Lenore Sellers out of South Carolina. He's big. He's fast. He has a cannon arm. He made the biggest thing I like to see on top of like your raw skills is how do you perform in tough moments? And I saw that guy step up in several big game moments and make big game throws and big game plays. I really like him and Cade Klubnik threw down. I like Cade Klubnik as well, but in their matchup, Lenore Sellers came out on top by just a bit. I like Garrett Nussmeier out of LSU, Cade Klubnik out of Clemson. There's a few guys here, but Lenore Sellers is right at the top of my list. I'll be intrigued to see, does he get in Heisman conversations? Because right now he's just the raw redshirt freshman who looks like he has a whole lot of promise, right? But if he's able to develop and become a superstar quarterback this year that carries South Carolina maybe into the playoffs or to an SEC championship game or something like crazy like that, then everyone else will be looking at him. It'll be a matter of who can the Steelers afford to trade up for? Because the Steelers aren't going to trade up into like the top three to get a quarterback. They're going to trade up probably to the back of the top 10. And Lenore Sellers, I think, is the right kind of quarterback with all the other guys that are on the board. Cade Klubnik, I'm not a Drew Aller guy, but some people are. But I think Lenore Sellers is the right mix of a guy who can be good enough to be a top 10 pick, but maybe not go top five, that could fit exactly what the Steelers need and be a guy that end up being one of the better guys of this class, just maybe not shown as much this year because I think these other guys might be in some better personal situations for them.
Chris, we'll stick with the college football talk here right now. Penn State over under 10.5 wins on the season. Pitt football over under 6.5 wins on the season, and West Virginia over under 5.5 on the season. Who do you like the most to hit their over for a win total on the season?
I like Penn State going over 10 wins. I think that they're a pretty good team. Is that including playoffs and bowl games?
No, regular season.
Okay. That changes a little bit. Because I actually think 10-2 is right in the mix for Penn State. So actually, I'll take their under there. You said 6.5 for Pitt and 5.5 for West Virginia, right?
Yep.
I like Pitt at 6.5. I think Pitt can get 7, maybe 8 wins if as long as they don't get decimated by injury. Granted, they've had that happen a few times to them in recent years. I think West Virginia, they need a year with Rich Rod to get up on that level. I think that when they get settled there, they'll be able to get there. But I think that right now Pitt, they're in a position. If you look at their schedule too in the ACC and the teams that they play, they should beat enough of these teams. If they don't, it'll be a disappointing year. I think that Eli Holstein, Des Reed, Kenny Johnson, they have some weapons on offense. So I'd be excited to see that. So give me Pitt at over 6.5 wins.
I agree with that. I think the one that I feel most confident about of those three to go over is Pitt. Penn State plays Oregon. They play Ohio State. I could see them losing both of those games. I think they're the better team. But big game James, right, baby. Big game James.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, we've talked about running back a ton for the Steelers on this show. And Dorn and I aren't as confident in the running back room as I think a lot of other people are. Do you look at that as a concern?
I look at it as a concern in the sense that if they don't gel with this offensive line, that could be a problem. We haven't just seen it yet. Now, there's a bit of a confidence that Jaylen Warren's going to be able to hit the right hole at the right time when this O-line gets going, and he's going to be able to use his speed and burst through it and make plays. But the concern that I have, and I've had it for years, I don't know if Jaylen Warren is your every down back that can last all season long and take the load. And granted, they have Kenneth Gainwell, they have Caleb Johnson, not going to ask him to do too much. But you saw in that preseason game, he fumbled in very short order. His fumble rate is significantly lower than Najee Harris was. And for all the things that Najee Harris wasn't, he was a ball protector. And he did not let that ball hit the turf. It was a big thing that, you know, for all the talents they lost of Le'Veon Bell when he didn't come back in 2018, his ability to protect the football was one of the biggest things that they lost that cost them in 2018 the playoff. You think of James Conner fumbling in some key moments, Stephen Ridley fumbling in some key moments. It was the running back position couldn't hold on to the football. They fumbled more times that season than I think Le'Veon Bell had fumbled in the last three. So if Jaylen Warren can't hold on to the ball, you're probably going to then turn to a lot more Caleb Johnson. And I think Caleb Johnson might be that dude, but it might take him a year to become that dude. It took Le'Veon Bell a year to do that himself. So I do agree that that could be a concern here. It's not neatly tied up and being like, oh, yeah, this group's good to go. Just assume that they're going to be great.
What do you think about wide receiver two?
I kind of like the idea that Calvin Austin and Roman Wilson, I believe Calvin Austin will be ready for week one. But I think that these guys, they're not proven bona fide wide receiver twos, but I think both of them are good wide receiver threes. And if Aaron Rodgers is able to distribute the football and not necessarily have to lean on one guy just to win matchups, he's going to find ways to exploit defenses with their abilities along with this tight end room. And I think that that could make up for the lack of the pure wide receiver two that everyone is just scared of as soon as they step foot on the field. But I do think also we got to give Roman Wilson a chance because we haven't seen Roman Wilson in games. I like the routes that he was running. I think that he could be a quiet killer for the Steelers. I like Calvin Austin's speed being back. And I think they could play off of DK Metcalf well. The biggest concern, though, is if DK Metcalf gets injured and has to sit out a game or two, who becomes wide receiver one in this offense? And that I don't know. And if that happens, then I do think that they run into a problem where it's going to take some serious creativity from Aaron Rodgers and Arthur Smith with working these tight end packages to scare defenses and to get some favorable matchups there.
All right, last one for you, but we're short on time. Did the Steelers do enough to fix their run defense?
I think they did. As long as Derek Harmon comes back healthy early in the season, I think that Derek Harmon, Cam Hayward, Keanu Benton, Floden, Y.A. Black, and Dan Aquale, I think those five guys in the middle will be much better than what they've had in the last couple of years on the D-line. They've been searching for that extra Stephon Tuitt presence on their D-line. They may have found a couple guys in Harmon and Black, and that might be the biggest thing that helps them this year, because if you just keep the linebackers clean, which they could not do a lot last season, if they take on those double teams well, they keep the linebackers clean, Patrick Queen, Peyton Wilson, Cole Holcomb, they'll all be that much more dangerous and more active in the run game. So many times we were complaining about Patrick Queen, it was just, hey, there's a lineman sprinting up to him in 5 seconds, and they're like, oh, well, he should be able to get rid of them. Ray Lewis didn't get rid of offensive linemen like that. Like, he used to say that when after that 2000s defense kind of aged out, he said the biggest thing we need to go get is D tackles, because Sam Adams and Tony Siragusa kept me clean, and that's what allowed me to be great. And then they went and got Haloti Ngata, and that helped change what the late 2000s Ravens defense could do. So the Steelers need those guys, multiple versions of those guys in the middle. I think they got them. If the linebackers are clean, they'll stuff the run better, and that'll help them find their footing and set up more third and longs where the pass rush can pin their ears back, the corners can play aggressive, and you can create more turnover-likely situations.
Chris, this was wonderful. It always is. We appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
Thanks, Chris.
Talk to you next Friday. Before this, get out of here. We'll talk to you.
Yeah, right. See you. You all right?
Having a rough one today.
All right, Ray Fittipaldi with us. Ray, if you could break down this trade from a Steelers perspective as someone that covers the Steelers and what Pittsburgh might think of this trade, what would it be?
Man, I mean, blockbuster. I mean, there were people as little as a month ago who wanted the Steelers to do like a Watt trade, you know, something along these lines. But, yeah, leave it to Jerry Jones. I mean, this is a blockbuster, man. You don't see many trades like this in the NFL, guys. And, you know, I was doing some research for a story I'm working on. You know, it's similar. It's how often do star quarterbacks go back and play their former team the year after they leave? And it just doesn't happen very often. I can only find three other instances in NFL history where a Hall of Fame quarterback, and, you know, this is the assumption that Rodgers, of course, is going to get into the Hall of Fame, but in only three other instances has a Hall of Fame quarterback gone back to play his former team the year after he left. So it's, I love these storylines. The Steelers and the Jets are playing in week one for a reason. And I think you guys know this would have been a primetime game if Rodgers had made his decision a month or so earlier. So it's setting up as a marquee matchup here in week one.
Ray, just looking at the Parsons deal too, it takes a game that was, I believe, a pick'em for the Steelers and Packers beforehand, and now I think, Pony, what did you say the line moved? 2 points in the Packers' favor now.
Yeah.
That the real tangible impact for me here too is just saying a game that you might have viewed as a coin flip now gets demonstrably harder to win because one of the absolute best players in the league, regardless of position, will be on the other side of that field in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I love it from the Packers' perspective. That tells me they're going for it. They think Jordan Love is the guy. And, you know, the interesting thing about that contract, and you guys quoted SpotTrack's numbers on that. I assume they're correct. He got $12 million more in guaranteed money than TJ got. So we all knew the number was going to be higher. You know, 108 for TJ in full guarantees, and now he gets 120. So we're inching closer, you know, to star players in the NFL almost getting fully guaranteed contracts. And you know, Parsons is pretty darn close there. So good for the players. You know, they've been pushing for this. Every other major sport has guaranteed contracts, and you know, Parsons, you know, other than Deshaun Watson, Parsons is getting as close as I think anyone can get.
Ray, you said this is rare to have a trade like this. It's also happening a week from the start of the NFL season. The Cowboys are going to play the Eagles at this time next week. How about the Steelers roster? Do you think what we see now is the team they're going to take to New York a week from Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's getting pretty late, guys. If they were going to make a big move, you know, nothing approaching what we saw today, but if they were going to go get someone of note, I think it probably would have been done by now. So I'm not saying they won't add a depth receiver, you know, like a guy like, you know, Scantling or somebody like that. I wouldn't consider that a huge move, but it seems to me that the longer this goes on, I think what it tells us is they do have confidence in Calvin Austin. They do have confidence in Roman Wilson, and they're willing to go into the season and at least see if these guys can produce. And if they don't, you always have the trade deadline to go out there and maybe make another move. You know, you could always sign guys off the street if those guys struggle. But for the time being, it certainly seems like Calvin Austin and Roman Wilson are going to duke it out to see who could be 2-3, you know, 3-4 in the receiving pecking order.
I'll ask again, though, Ray, how often do you even expect it to shake out like that on a given offensive series where it's Metcalf and then an actual wide receiver as the second option versus one of the tight ends they have?
Well, you're right about that. I mean, we're going to see a ton of Smith and Freiermuth on the field at the same time. You'll almost always have a second receiver on the field, so it's just going to depend on the situation. I mean, the thing about Arthur Smith's offense, guys, if they want to run the ball, you're going to see Ben Skowronek out there as the second receiver on a lot of these occasions. And you'll see Wilson and you'll see Austin. They don't want to be predictable. You know, they are going to throw the ball a lot with Aaron Rodgers. But the point is, and I think this was your point, Chris, Pat Freiermuth and Jonnu Smith really are going to be the second and third receivers. And then I think Wilson and Austin are going to get their fair share. But I don't think it's going to be anything approaching like what other number two receivers or even number three receivers get in terms of targets around the league.
Ray, what's going on with Will Howard? We had Hathorn on yesterday, and he said to us, the way they did this made him think it's possible. He didn't say it would happen. But Jeff said he thinks it's possible Howard ends up spending the entire year on injured reserve. What do you think is going to go down there?
I agree with Jeff. I definitely think it's a possibility. And, you know, I've written about this, but I feel like I have to explain it to fans because it's a relatively new rule. Before they set the 53-man rosters, you could put players on IR with a designation to return. Now, the Steelers did that with Corey Trice. So Corey Trice is going to come back to the roster when he is healthy. When you put a guy on IR after the 53-man is set, you don't have to put a designation to return on him. Now, they could do that with Howard at any point, but there's no obligation to do that. So they could put him on the shelf for the entire season, like they did with Logan Lee last year. They've done it in the past. It's just a way to stash rookies, and to get them a year of service. They're in the building, they're on the team, but they're not practicing with the rest of the guys.
I mean, how much do they feel though that might inhibit his development to whatever end they think he fits into their future, Ray?
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but there's also a football season to be played, and they could not evaluate Will Howard in any of the preseason games, and I think that's a huge thing for coaches when it comes to rookies. Listen, Will Howard was a sixth-round pick. There's no guarantees that if you bring him back as a number three quarterback that he's going to be better than Skylar Thompson. And I think the Steelers coaches realize that. And there's also the factor of you want somebody with experience and someone that you evaluated in that position in case you do have to break that glass in case of an emergency like we saw back in 2019. So I think Jeff was right. I've thought that all along, and it's just the way the Steelers operate, and I think it's the way a lot of teams would operate in that situation. You're not just going to put a rookie in a position, in an important position on the roster without him practicing or playing in the preseason.
Ray, what is your official Steelers win-loss record prediction for 2025?
I'm going to be boring. I think this is probably what I said way back when the schedule came out. I'm going to go 10-7. I think they sneak into the playoffs, but likely as a wild card.
And do you have them winning their first playoff game since 2016?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's going to depend on the matchup. But, I think if Rodgers is healthy, this will be their best shot to win a playoff game since 2016. For a lot of those years, it was Ben at the end. You know, what happened in recent years with the revolving door quarterback. I think this is the reason they went out and got Rodgers to win the playoffs, and I'll say yes if Rodgers is healthy at the end of the year.
All right, so follow-up question that I've asked everyone who's answered that question that exact way. If they win a playoff game and win 10 games, do you think Aaron Rodgers will be back with the Steelers in 2026?
I mean, that's an interesting question. I mean, they're probably going to still draft a quarterback, number one, but there's no role that guy has to play early. I mean, organizations have different philosophies on bringing those guys along. Now the frame of reference with the Steelers is Ben, but Ben only played because Tommy Maddox got hurt. I would think the Steelers would want to be conservative there and bring that quarterback along slowly. So, yeah, certainly. I could see a guy like Rodgers coming back. I know he's left the door open. Let's see how the season plays out. And I certainly wouldn't rule that out at this point.
All right. Thank you so much, Ray. We'll talk again next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking, or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great, but it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
All right, Limits. The inimitable Andrew Lindbergh handed me a survey during the break there. A survey conducted by the Action Network. Okay, and their methodology here was between August 14th and 19th, which was very recently by my calculations, 3,058 NFL fans based in the U.S. were asked this question, and maybe some others. Can you find this survey so we can find some other ones? Limits, just look up survey from the Action Network. But for our purposes, these fans, you know, representing a cross-section of NFL cities, found or voted that Aaron Rodgers is the most annoying player in the NFL, taking 24% of the overall vote. How about that? I don't even think that he should be close. The most annoying players to me, by far, and Travis Kelce apparently finished second on this list. Now I'm having trouble reading this list because I don't know what they're doing. Oh, here's all the different fan bases. They all found Aaron Rodgers the most annoying, most of them. Like 15 of them or so, and the rest, no, like 20. The rest found Travis Kelce most annoying, and we all know why that is, because every time you watch a Chiefs game, there's Travis and Taylor, right? That's why that happened.
Right, yeah, they're just sick of it. And Patrick Mahomes is also on that list, probably because they've done so much winning.
Now, Rodgers, I'm sure for, you know, his takes on McAfee and things like that gets these votes. But when I think of the term annoying, you know who I think of most in the NFL?
Who?
And I respect him, obviously. He's great. Patrick Mahomes. He's annoyingly great in a way. But his propensity for faking or embellishing hits is unbelievably annoying. And just the way that he executes late game drives really irks me, as great as he is. It's one little dink and dunk after another. The Chiefs win, you know, they don't bludgeon people. It's death by a thousand paper cuts. And it's maybe as I watch these Bills Chiefs games mount over the years in the playoffs, he really becomes especially annoying to me. But I think it's Mahomes. He doesn't even appear here for a lot of these fan bases, although he does ultimately appear on the list. You know who the Steelers fans voted for as the most annoying?
Probably Myles Garrett.
Aaron Rodgers.
What?
Yes. Followed by Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, Odell Beckham, and Shador Sanders.
Odell Beckham and Shador. That's funny.
See, that I would agree with you. If you would tell me tomorrow that you would send out this question to every Steelers season ticket holder, Myles Garrett would win by a landslide.
You'd think so.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I 100% think so.
Is he the most annoying player to you?
Yeah, he is.
Anybody else close? Kelce? Kelce's annoying, though. It's not just because of that. It's because of the way he acts on the field and the sidelines as well.
Right.
Remember, like, when he got in Andy Reid's grill during the Super Bowl?
Yeah,
that
first
one year?
Drive.
Yeah.
Like, Burrow and Chase are annoying just because they're so good. The Ravens are annoying. Players on the Ravens are annoying, like Lamar, just because they're good and they can beat you in so many different ways.
Yeah.
Myles Garrett just annoys the hell out of you for a multitude of reasons.
A multitude of reasons is right. Well, it's Mahomes and him for me. And again, Mahomes' greatness is undeniable, but it's just the whole... Remember we did a whole thing on this last year with the Chiefs, and I wrote a whole story about it. Are they the most reviled team? Definitely since the Patriots, but maybe ever. Like, people, they drive people nuts because of their inevitability. They're always there. Every time you turn on your TV for a big game, there are the Chiefs. They've gone to the AFC title game every year with Mahomes, and it's always the same thing. Him dinking and dunking people to death, and then they go up, you know, with the shots in the press box with the Kelce brothers and Taylor Swift and Mahomes' wife and everybody else, and it's the same thing. It's the repetition over and over that people, I think, last year just exploded. And it exploded in that Texans game when he embellished those roughing the passer penalties. That's what happened, right?
I really wondered, why do the Houston Texans and Indianapolis Colts find Aaron Rodgers the most annoying?
Yeah, why is that?
I don't get that. The Cleveland Browns, their most annoying is Deshaun Watson.
That I do get.
That's hilarious. Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers, 43% that voted say Aaron Rodgers is the most annoying.
I guess, is there a difference between when I think of the Chiefs, like this was the headline last January, are the Kansas City Chiefs the most hated team in American sports history? Maybe that's a function of social media, where you become more aware of people's feelings real time than you normally would, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I honestly believe that millions of Americans despise the Chiefs. And it's, again, a lot of it's out of respect. People don't like the prom queen either, right? People don't like the prom king. People from outside of Pittsburgh don't like Sidney Crosby. People outside of New England hated Tom Brady. Why? Jealousy is another thing. Jealous of all those people are. I had a couple tweets from people about the Chiefs last year. Nobody is better at snatching the soul and ripping the heart out of their opponent than the Chiefs. I despise them and their inevitability, said Lauren. Lauren Elizabeth was her name. Mike Carpenter tweeted, and this was in the wake of that Texans game last year when everybody was hating on Mahomes. You remember that, Limits?
Of course.
The Phantom roughing the passer, another one where he did this, you know, Vlade Divac acting job, a Joe Nedney acting job. Mike Carpenter, is there a more boring, unlikable dynasty than the Chiefs? I begrudgingly respected the Patriots, he said. What is it about Kansas City that drives me insane? And this was where I landed with this, Limits. They win all the time, right? So they're there all the time. Any team that wins all the time becomes hated. There's no likable dynasty. Never has been, because people are jealous. Obviously, people in their home state love them, but everybody outside gets sick of them and grows to hate them. That's true in all of sports. Hate the Yankees, hated the Penguins, hated the Blackhawks, hated the Canadians in the 70s, hated the 49ers and the Cowboys and the Steelers and everybody else who's ever had a dynasty. That's just going to happen. It's the way that they have won. It's death, like I said, by 1,000 mosquito bites or gnat bites, if you prefer, Limits. They're not fun to watch, I don't think. It's the tomahawk chop and chant, particularly around here, because there's enough people still who have PTSD from Atlanta Braves games of the past, right?
My dad feels that way.
Nobody wants to hear that or watch that. I don't even think the people who do it in Kansas City want to do it. They just feel compelled because everybody else is doing it.
Probably.
I hate that thing.
They give in to the peer pressure.
Don't you hate it?
I do.
And your dad hates it?
My dad does because of the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah. Obviously, Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, even though I like Taylor Swift. My daughter's a big fan. She seems like a nice person. But it gets annoying. And then there's the refs who always seem to favor the Chiefs, don't they, Limits?
Well, I mean, think about that roughing the passer penalty and the penalty against Cincinnati on that
Think about the Bills last year in Kansas City.
Yeah, that was bad.
When Josh Allen had the first down, it always seems to go there. Think about the Super Bowl they won on a ticky-tack holding call on the Eagles. So, what else do you see on the Action Network? Does it say most hated team, or do they have other questions on there? What do they got?
Yeah, so there was a most hated team that was put out just about a week ago.
Has to be the Chiefs.
So, they did who were the most hated for each individual team.
Yeah.
The Steelers most hated, the Kansas City Chiefs. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can. I just talked for an hour about it. What?
I'm stunned that it's not the Browns or the Ravens.
I'm not. Everybody hates the Chiefs. Tell me more.
There's really no description that's given. It's just a graphic that says how many teams voted for the Chiefs altogether.
What other teams do people hate?
17% of the respondents said the Dallas Cowboys,
yeah,
followed by Kansas City.
Dallas has been hateable since my childhood, when they, you know, arrogantly declared themselves America's team. And make no mistake, the Steelers took note of that. As Joe Green told me, you know, we watched all that stuff. And really, the Steelers became America's team. But it's been, the Cowboys have had a certain arrogance about them for a long time. They earned it, you know, way back when. They certainly haven't earned it in recent decades, have they? Limits?
No.
You're very slow to answer my questions today. What's going on back there?
Well, Andy Lindberg is back here. There's a food truck, and we were looking at the menu.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to interrupt. You're on a radio show right now. Are you aware of that?
I'm just playing. Cleveland and Baltimore have the Steelers as the team that they most want to see lose.
Hmm. And I think the Steelers are also, going from way back, a team that other people are jealous of. Now, you may say they shouldn't be jealous over the last 8 years, but still, there are some people who are jealous of going to the playoffs a lot.
I think they'd be jealous of 6 Super Bowls in general.
Yeah, just the general success of the franchise. All right. We have Aaron Rodgers on tape as well from what show is it?
It was from Mad Dog Radio with Adam Schein.
What do you got?
All right, this is what Aaron Rodgers said about potentially coming back next season. He's not, at least not fully rolling it out.
Is this really your final year?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I'll reassess all that in the end. But, you know, when I signed a one-year contract, you know, there was nothing about in there about playing longer than 1 year. But we'll see how it goes. Obviously, you'd love to have success and be healthy. And, you know, we can start there with health, have some success, and enjoy it. Make a run. It'd be really special. And then we'll figure that out come next February.
Yeah, I never thought when he first said on the Pat McAfee show, it was couched with, I think this is my last ride, stuff like that. And we all know how things change in sports. If he loves it here and he plays well and he feels healthy and they have a nice little run, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if he returns next season. Not the least bit. You?
I would be a little bit surprised. I would, just because how adamant he was before the start of the year about assessing his situation. Do I want to retire? Do I want to play? If he's very good, obviously there's a much better chance he comes back. I'm just not as sold that that is much of a definite, especially because I think the Steelers are so intrigued by the possibility of drafting a quarterback next year. I wonder if Aaron would want somebody looking over his shoulder when he's still the starter, but knowing that there's going to be a rookie behind him, likely first-round pick, breathing down his neck for reps.
Meanwhile, speaking of quarterbacks, Will Howard headed to IR. Will Howard became a gigantic story. If you ask me, an outsized story for a 6th-round draft pick. And Cabali, much as we love him, seems to be going wild about this, saying it's a lost season. He said this on the Cabali and Mac podcast. I think Will Howard needs to be fed as much as he can be, even if it's for 4 weeks, up to 7 weeks, whatever it could be on IR. Depending on where they start the clock, it's a lost season. So he's basically saying at some point here, it could be a lost season for Will Howard. He's a 6th-round pick. If this were, you know, they drafted Tino Cinceri from Pitt or something, would we be saying the same things? Like, when did we get to Will Howard might be the answer here? I don't get it.
Well, some people have tried to push that Will Howard could possibly be the guy, and have compared college stats with Josh Allen. Hi, Pony. Hi. No, I'm talking about Pony, Joe.
Oh.
He's the one that has pushed the Will Howard thing the most of anyone. But I digress. I think a lot of the thoughts around Will Howard significantly overblown just because the Steelers don't have a long-term answer. So, of course, the guy that's not local, but you've seen play a lot, national championship, it gets people fired up that he could actually be the guy to the point where expectations became way too overwhelming for him. You know, we're obviously not going to... Over expectations.
For him? Overwhelming for him? I
don't
think
so. Not for him personally, but just around his name.
Yeah, became overdone. I agree with that. And I'm not saying he couldn't be the guy. But we're going to react like this to him getting put on four-week IR? Okay, then what if he doesn't play or he doesn't get activated at all? What was he going to do anyway? Take a couple snaps in practice? Run a scout team now and again? This story is just like they've made a terrible mistake here. Well, what?
I do want to raise one question.
He's a sixth round quarterback now. Sixth round quarterbacks can make it. Free agent guys can make it. For all I know, he could be the Steelers guy of the future. I don't think this is really putting a damper on his career. However, because right now as we sit here today, it's 4 weeks on IR.
I do wonder if you would go back and ask Roman Wilson, would you rather have been out the entire year or have been on the roster active? Maybe you're not playing in games, but you're the fifth guy and still going through practice reps, what he would have taken.
Of course you take the practice reps. Of course.
So I think that's probably what Cabali is getting at here.
Well,
like,
yeah,
it's
better than
just sitting on the sidelines and doing nothing.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that doing a little something or not being able to do a little something is going to crush your career.
Right.
Or what is he going to be doing anyway? That's my question. There's two quarterbacks in front of him. I guess he'd run the scout team. I guess that can be helpful. Sure. But I just think that the whole Will Howard story was way overblown in this preseason. Again, if it was sixth round pick, Jimny Fennerknonen. Right?
Jimny Fennerknonen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jimny Fennerknonen.
Or Chris Oladokun.
Jimny Fennerknonen from, UConn. Nobody would be thinking twice about this. Right? Now, it's a guy who won a national championship. A lot of guys win national championships who don't make it in the pros.
UConn won the Fenway Bowl this year.
Who aren't even drafted or drafted as low as Howard. And again, he's got some interesting, physical traits. He does. And is clearly a winner. So I don't want to discount him, but come on. He's on IR for 4 weeks, Cabali.
UConn won the Fenway Bowl against North Carolina in the last game that was not coached by Bill Belichick by the Tar Heels.
Wrong. We're going to be talking about all of that tomorrow, by the way, on a Donnie Football Friday. But as I mentioned yesterday when we came on the air, I could not believe that the Savannah Bananas had sold out Friday and Saturday, is it limits? Those two
yes.
nights? At PNC Park.
Yeah.
That they sold out Clemson Stadium. That they're selling out Major League Baseball stadiums. I had no idea. I just didn't. I knew who they were. I've seen a clip here and there on SportsCenter or whatever. I had no idea they were this big.
Now Dave Wonstadt is on the line. Dave, thank you for joining us today. Good morning to you. How you doing?
I am doing great. Good morning to you, everybody in Pittsburgh.
Dave, you are doing Fox Sports again, and we're very excited about that. And so I'm sure today is a very exciting day for you, what with college football and the NFL coming back.
It is, yes. I'll be watching, all those games as usual, and I'll be doing a Big Ten TV show tomorrow. So I got a lot to talk about, and I always manage to get Pitt in the conversation when I'm talking on these TV shows and talking college football. So I'm kind of excited. I was up there. I saw Doran in the spring and Pat, and I saw a practice down there at the field. Coach Narduzzi was so nice, and all the coaches were, and the staff, and I was very impressed. I really was. I was anxious to see
your quarterback. I wanted to see him up close because I've seen him play on TV, and boy, he was more impressive in person than what I expected. So I think if you keep him healthy, I think I'm excited about the year.
Coach, speaking of quarterbacks, this is a big year for college quarterbacks. There's at least 10 quarterbacks that could possibly go in the first and second round. So we know that the Steelers here are going to be drafting a quarterback in 2026. We believe that. We 100% almost believe that. Drew Aller, quarterback at Penn State. What do you think that he's capable of this year? And do you think he should be a viable option when the Steelers are on the clock in 2026 to draft him to be the next franchise quarterback?
Well, he'll be a high draft pick, and obviously he's had crazy success there. We know about his success. We don't need to talk about that. But I think it comes down to, you know, in today's world with quarterbacks, there's some real different opinions. I mean, you've got some coordinators and head coaches and general managers that are looking for the athlete type of quarterback that can do some things within their scheme. And then there's still the traditional drop back and throw it. So, you know, I'm not sure exactly where Mike's at, Tomlin, on that, you know, what he's looking for. Do I think that Drew Aller will be a top pick? Sure he will be, because they're going to win a lot of games. And he's got a good supporting cast, and the guy's a winner. I mean, he really helped himself, I think, by staying another year and not going. But, whether it's the Steelers or not, it's all a matter of what they're looking for in a quarterback, and does he fit that mold?
Dave Wannstedt joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. How about the game to kick things off on Fox on Saturday? You got Texas in the horseshoe taking on Ohio State, and Arch Manning getting his first taste of real big boy ball. What do you think he is capable of, and how do you expect that to go, his first big-time start?
Well, I'd like to just be in that quarterback meeting this week, because I know Sark, you know, the head coach there pretty well. But he's going to have his uncles Eli in there. He's going to have Peyton in there. He's probably going to have his grandpa in there with him. So it's going to be hilarious. They're all going to have opinions. I feel bad for the kid. You know, I mean, if you really think about it, you know, he's going to have about six different quarterbacks who have played at a high level, relatives of his, family members, coaching him up. So, and then he's got to go to Ohio State on the road. So it'll be interesting to see, because this will be a whole different deal now that the spotlight's on you. And Ohio State, you know, they got the Julian Sayin kid. He was the number one quarterback coming out of high school 2 years ago. He was Nick Saban's last recruit. And then when Saban retired a week later, he ended up going to Ohio State. He didn't play much at all last year. So he's technically a redshirt freshman. In fact, he is a redshirt freshman. And they graduate four of the five offensive linemen. I mean, you know, Ohio State graduated a ton of people. So how he handles that will be interesting, too. It's amazing. You're right. You made a good point. How many new quarterbacks, whether they be transfers or freshmen, that are starting in college football this year?
Coach, what's one thing that a 41-year-old quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, we know he's going to be a Hall of Famer. We know that he can still throw the football. We know he still hasn't lost the mindset in the smarts of playing football. But what's one thing that he has to do this year in order to have a successful season with the Steelers at 41 years old?
Well, I think if he plays like he did last year, he's going to have a successful season. I mean, that was a mess up there, unfortunately, for him at the Jets, you know, with the coaches and the coordinators. And he came into New York last year, and he was supposed to be the savior, you know, and there was so much pressure on him, so much going on, in my opinion, that I don't know if he really had, you know, a fair chance. And the defense with the Steelers is going to help him. The running game, I mean, the commitment to the running game is going to be critical, you know, and I know Warren's there. He's a good player. I really like Caleb Johnson. I mean, God, out of Iowa, I think he's a player And because when you look at his best years at Green Bay, when he was winning Super Bowls and MVP, Aaron Jones, who was his running back, who's with the Vikings now, Green Bay was in the top five in running the football. Okay. And that's what set up, you know, the play action passes and so forth and so on. So I think, you know, the Steelers with a commitment to the running game, I mean, a serious commitment to the running game, that is a priority if you want to get the best out of Aaron Rodgers, because history has proven that. And, you know, so I'm excited for him. I mean, I've been a fan of his all along. I think the guy is really talented. I think the guy's a great leader. He's got the history, and he's going to make plays in every game that give Pittsburgh a chance to win. And, you know, the good thing about him, you always talk about quarterbacks that separates them. If your team's down by 10 points and you got 6-7 minutes to go in the game, do you have a guy at quarterback that you are confident can get on and score twice and win the game? And I think Aaron Rodgers is that guy.
So to that end, in Fox football analyst, a familiar name around here, obviously, Dave Wannstedt joining us here on the Fan Morning Show. They haven't been competitive in a playoff game in 8 years, Dave. Do you think this is the year that they could win, dare I say, a playoff game?
Well, I don't know. I mean, hell, the worst thing that they could do is start worrying about, you know, the playoffs right now. You know, and I was doing a thing yesterday with some guys from Buffalo, and they're asking me the same question. I said, better slow down. I said, you know, right now this is not the NBA. Everybody wants to just get to the playoffs and then see what happens. I mean, you got to win week one versus the Jets. You know, you got to win enough games and keep your focus on the season. Fans don't do that. The media doesn't do that. I get all that. But, you know, as a head coach and as a football team and as the players on that team, you know, if that's your focus, you know, you're going to get caught up. The competition is too darn, you guys know that. The competition's too darn good during the NFL, during the season in the NFL, that someone's going to, every week, you can get beat. So I would not get ahead of myself as far as worrying about the playoffs right now. That's just my opinion.
Coach, last week I was sitting on my couch, I put my feet up, and I was like, I'm going to check out this Netflix documentary, America's Team, the Gambler and his Cowboys. and I did not expect to see you have as many cameos as you did. I mean, it was fantastic. If you watched The Last Dance with the Chicago Bulls, and I'm sure that you've seen it, it ranks right up there. This was unbelievable from, you know, the ins and outs of Jerry Jones. And, you know, I was a little kid whenever the Cowboys and you and the Cowboys were on your run in the 90s, but everybody knew about the Cowboys. I had an Emmitt Smith jersey. I had a Michael Irvin jersey. I had an Aikman jersey. Everybody loved the Cowboys. Was that one of the best, like, eye-opening experiences of your coaching career, of coaching, you know, for the, what, second time with Jimmy Johnson? You coached with him with the, you know, Miami Hurricanes, but in the NFL with Jimmy Johnson and Jerry Jones and, you know, how he was, you know, in front of all the things that he did. Like, was that one of the most, you know, biggest experiences you've had in your coaching career?
It was wild. That's all I'll say. And if you watch a little bit of that Netflix things, you know, it gave me flashbacks to when we were at Miami with the convicts and the Catholics. You know, we had the same type of characters up there. And there was so much that I talked about and Jimmy talked about. Jerry had the final say-so on what was going to be in there, obviously. So he scratched a lot of my stories and a lot of Jimmy's stories, you know, for whatever reason. But Jimmy and I talked about it a couple of times since it's come out and just kind of laughing about it. But, no, we had some great players, and we were young. And you know what's crazy is I'm just talking about the Steelers. Now think about this. So we beat the Eagles, okay, at home, and now we're going to go play San Francisco for the NFC Championship. And Troy Aikman, we were all in the locker room, and Troy turned to somebody. We were the youngest team in the NFL, and Troy actually said something in a roundabout way, do you mean if we beat San Francisco, we're going to go to the Super Bowl? I mean, that's kind of, we were just kind of playing, we were coaching ball and just trying to make sure our best players got off the bus, as we say. And, Charles Haley, he threatened to kick my butt the first meeting I was in. I jumped him. First day he was here, we signed him on a Tuesday, and he comes in on a Wednesday. And back then, you know, I'm meeting with the whole defense, and he you had to put it on the whiteboard by hand back then. There wasn't all this computerized stuff that they have nowadays. So I'm putting in the game plan. We're going to open up on Sunday night against Washington, who just won the Super Bowl. Okay, this is a huge, huge game for us. And Charles is horsing around. I tell him, to, hey, keep it. Charles, get your notepad out. He looked at me, you know. And then I yell at him again, and we get into it in the meeting. So the meeting's over, and he comes up to me and closes the door. There's nobody in there. I'm erasing the board, and he looks at me and says, and now he's – I'm 6'4", but Charles is bigger than I am. So he's I'm kind of looking up to him, if you can believe that. And he says, Coach, you are lucky that I've matured, or I would kick your blanky blank right now. And I look at my watch, and I said, Charles, I am glad you matured too. We got to be on the field in 10 minutes. Let's go. Wait. And I open the door, and Jimmy's standing outside the door like a kid at Christmas. We just made this trade for Charles Haley, and we came to the conclusion that we needed help with pass rush. So Jimmy's standing outside waiting, and everybody comes out. The door comes open. Charles goes storming past him. I come walking out. He says, how'd it go, Dave? I says, Coach, it went fantastic, and I just kept walking. You know, I didn't tell him that he threatened to kick my, you know what, until after the season was over. But, oh, and we, yeah, it was, there's a thousand stories. So it was a great run, though, for us, you know, to be the worst team in football, and then 4 years later to be the best team in football was kind of a great experience, obviously. It was a lot of fun, a lot of crazy times. Yep.
Well, it's funny the story you told, because my next question was going to be, I mean, how do you manage all those personalities, or is it just roll the ball out there? I mean, it sounds like a little bit of both.
Make sure, we used to say, get up, you know, but yeah, you know what our philosophy was, and it was really Jimmy's, and Doran's probably heard me say this, you know, let's get some players that do things that we don't have to coach. And when we were at Miami, we had some characters now, you know, I mean, you guys know that, you know, the army fatigues and the convict. I mean, oh boy, it was every week. It was like Dallas. Okay. And we've talked about that. Do we want this player? Or we want this player. And we said, we want players like Doran Dickerson. Okay. That are going to come in here and are just going to do things because of his instincts and his smarts and his athletic ability that we don't have to coach every step of the way. And so along with that comes some characters like Doran. So that's all part of it, you know.
Well, Dave,
I knew Doran was well. I knew Doran. I knew you had an Emmitt Smith jersey. You wanted to be a running back. You know, you gotta don't know the story. I had I remember one long meeting with Doran's mother and father, who were fantastic people. And I'm trying to get Doran on the field, and he wants to be a running back. And I don't who we had with LaRod. I don't know
yep.
who we had. That doesn't, you know. And so we needed help. We were building from scratch. So Doran was a type of athlete and football player that I really felt he could play three. So I wanted him on defense. I said, put him on defense. He'll make 1,000 tackles. And then they wanted him at tight end, and they wanted him at running back. And then he wanted to play some. He wanted the ball. So I remember we had a heart-to-heart talk with his mom and dad, and you know, I think the end result is what these kids don't get nowadays. In today's world, Doran would have been gone to Florida or yep. USC, wherever he'd have been gone, okay? But his mom and dad encouraged him, stay with it. They had faith in me, had faith in what we were trying to do there, and the rest is history. So I think Doran's story is a great lesson for these young kids nowadays that kid bots around and they don't get a degree and they really, some of them become superstars, but most of them go other places and it doesn't work out like they think. So that really came to light when you said you had the Emmitt Smith jersey, but anyway, I got a little bit off track here, but I still
want to be a running back.
Oh, I'm sure you do. Yeah. So did Pat Bostic. I don't know. You know what I mean? Everybody.
Dave, you're the best, man. We appreciate you jumping on, and hopefully we'll be able to do this a few more times here in the near future.
I told Doran anytime he needs me to come on, just give me a yell and we'll do it. Okay?
You're the man, Coach. Appreciate you.
All right, see you guys. Bye.
He's best. He's best.
No team has ever won the AFC North in back-to-back-to-back years. So take that, Tom Amansky. The Baltimore Ravens are facing that historical uphill battle in 2025 to be the first three-peat champ.
Do you think that the Steelers are the biggest threat to them externally?
I know you're not, because when you heard Gronkowski say that before the show, I believe you went, oh, no, 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 was the way it sounded.
I made it sound like my family was being taken from me by force.
Donnie, would you agree with my summation of how I did that? The noise he made, the way he said no?
I think you got a little bit carried away there, but he was not.
You
positive.
Sounded like Flo Rida on Xanax. Everybody get no.
It wasn't
no,
a no.
no
it
no.
was a oh no. Oh,
no, you said, no. Hey, Chris, did you hear Gronk said that the Steelers were going to win the division? And I said, no.
It was more drawn out than that.
I went, no.
But you said no multiple times.
Well, that was just an answer to whether or not I had heard it. Do I agree with Gronk? Also no. Man, Gronk falling into the same trap that a lot of people in the national media fall into.
What's that?
Just blindly say if you take player X from bad organization Y and plug him into that Steelers winning culture, it's just like planting a seed in some rich soil and it's going to grow.
But that is true, though. The Steelers do have they're winning. They do have a winning culture compared to the Jets. It's not close. The Jets haven't won a playoff game since 2010.
I believe each team's last appearance in an AFC. No, the Steelers did have that one where they got their doors blown off. I always forget about that one in New England. Steelers really are not appreciably better when it comes to playoff wins than the Jets since 2010. What do they have, two or three more total?
How many more playoff wins do they have since the Jets in 2010? Yeah, they have three more.
Yeah, okay. So divide
that's triple. That's a lot more.
It's one every 4 years more. Wow, great job. Cool, guys.
Man, you chose violence today.
I just think that it's like Gronk is not on there either to like break down the X's and O's and tell you why and tell you in the analytical numbers. He's there to try to entertain on Kay Adams' show. And I think that's just like spinning the hits. He goes, I went there my senior year of high school. Like, there's some self-awareness there that he knows how absurd that sounds.
Well, I'll put your feet to the fire. We've been asking our experts and listeners all week. Mm-hmm. To give a Steelers record prediction. What's yours for 2025?
Do you want to do this now instead of next week?
Yeah.
Probably 10-7.
10-7?
9-8 or 10-7.
Well, can you pick one?
I will go in the low end. I'll go 9-8.
9-8.
Yeah.
Will they make the playoffs?
Yes. They will somehow drag their carcass in as the seventh seed. But even as I say that, I probably have to give them 10-7. Switch it. 10-7, make the playoffs, destroyed in the wild card round.
Not even just a loss. You're going to go with destroyed.
I think beat by more than one score, which in the NFL, where most point spreads are under one touchdown or under 8 points, I think constitutes getting beat up pretty
so
good.
So my follow-up question is, if you're willing to go as far as a double-digit win season, why are you so quick to dismiss them as a team that can win the division? Why is that such a far-fetched idea? The Ravens play the toughest schedule in the division. Their extra games that no one else, Bengals, Steelers, or Browns, are playing this year are at Kansas City and the Rams. I think there's probably one extra loss in there.
Okay.
In one of those two games. You have, I think, still some questions about wide receiver, questions about offensive line there, questions about how good their linebackers are other than Roquan Smith. They gave Matabuke a big deal. He didn't really not play up to it last year. Hayward outplayed him big time. I don't think he finished on any of the all-pro lists. Just had a ho-hum season by his standards.
Okay.
Their leading sacker was Kyle Van Noy, who I think is the same age as you and me.
Okay.
So there's question about where they get their pass rush from. And Lamar Jackson played last year 100% healthy, and given his style of play, I think it's fair to think they might miss him for at least a game or two this year. So I guess the reason why I'm not poo-pooing Rob Gronkowski is because I don't think that the team that is picked to win the division by most experts is far and away better than the rest of the
division. Are the Steelers the next best team in the division behind them? If they are the best, I don't even know if you're going to acknowledge them as the best.
The odds makers here say no. They have the Bengals
at plus
260. I'm asking
you. No, that's a dodge.
It's not a dodge. It's me just laying out the facts first.
Okay, now give me your opinion.
I think the Bengals are better. I think a team that has a quarterback that threw for 43 touchdowns last year. And
that ultimately did handle all of their offseason business, even if they got ripped for it.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it like when Ben was in his prime, they missed the playoffs two straight years. They missed it in 12 and 13. They came back in 14 and won the division.
They're going to benefit, too, from missing the playoffs and having an easier schedule.
It's hard for me to imagine, even for an organization like the Bengals that gets a lot of things wrong, it's hard for me to picture that quarterback who's that good with Higgins and Chase still there is going to miss the playoffs three straight years. I have a hard time.
I mean, they're playing
reconciling
the
Browns.
I think they have a very good chance to start 2-0 because they have the Browns on the road.
And they play their guys in the preseason.
And they have the Jags at home. And I think the Jags are going to be improved. But I think if Burrow and all those guys are healthy, I like the fact that they got Reisner, who I think is going to help them solidify their offensive line depth-wise even more.
Yeah.
I think they have the best quarterback running, even with Derrick Henry being in Baltimore. Like, if you ask me to take a set of weapons, I would give them a very narrow edge over the Ravens when it comes to backs, receivers, quarterback.
The Ravens' win total here at the Rivers is 11.5, and you've got the Steelers at 10. So that's not that far off from Baltimore.
Yeah, part of my...
When you look at it that way.
Part of my...
And you were so dismissive of the Steelers.
I'm sorry.
I
just did a double take. A very famous television star walked by us just now.
Yeah, that's Corey Graves from WWE.
Yeah, very famous television star. And they were he and his buddy.
Did they recognize us?
Yeah, they did.
Why didn't they come over and say hi?
I think they knew that we were in the middle of a segment. It was a Troy Beck, man of much famous chicken around town.
Does he schlep it?
I don't think he schleps it. He serves it up.
Oh.
But he's making very delicious chicken sandwiches. He and Corey are just carousing about the casino.
Donnie, whose side are you more on here in this discussion, that it's not that far-fetched or that it's very far-fetched what Gronkowski said?
Well, I mean, I don't want to sound as negative as Chris, but I just think it's more because I feel as if the Ravens are going to be really, really good. Like, I think they're going to win like 14 games.
Holy crap.
I think they're going to be like the one seed in the AFC.
Yeah, I think that I don't know if I'm going to hammer the over on 11.5 wins, but I'd feel decent about it.
I mean, I just wonder now, Donnie, having said that, has that turned into a prevailing thought among Steelers fans? Because for years it wasn't. Even when Lamar Jackson was winning MVPs, it was he can't win the big game.
Don't you think the way he handled the Steelers is what changed here?
Thank you for making the point that I was about to make.
Well, you do that to me once in a while.
I know. I was trying to set it up, though. Yeah. Have attitudes changed because in December and then January, we've got back-to-back games where Lamar Jackson has schooled the Steelers, and he had never done it before. He was bad against them. He didn't look like an MVP. He barely looked like a starting quarterback. We've run the passer rating numbers. His passer rating said he turned into Mitch Trubisky against the Steelers until those last two games in the playoffs and then late in the regular season where Russell Wilson had the fumble and everything else, the pick six in that game. So to hear Donnie say that he thinks that there's this massive gulf now between the Steelers and Ravens, more so in Donnie's world because the Ravens are just that elite of a team. I think, I'm not putting words in his mouth, but I kind of am. I feel like that is a reaction to Baltimore wasn't a hollow double-digit win team last year. They played you for all the marbles and they whooped your ass. And I guess I can understand if Steelers fans now go into this season thinking like, yeah, I have to finally give the Ravens their credit, they're much better than us.
If you thought there was a mental edge that the Steelers had over Lamar Jackson
and I did
that
think
superseded
that.
Everything, then I didn't believe that in the first place. but it was eradicated.
But you did say you started to come around to that. After the game they lost here, you said, I did not want to believe that, but now it's just mounting evidence.
I thought that there was a situation where he had lost a bunch of games in a very weird fashion, and the fact that he lost one last year to start the season or early in the season in similarly just kind of head-scratching manner, and the Steelers, I think, made him look pretty bad in that game, started to mount the evidence. But then everybody who ended up saying, hey, wait till he actually plays them twice in the same season. He hardly ever does that. He gets a chance to come back around at them. You'll see what happens then. They were proven right. He delivered an ass-whooping. I think the Steelers' problem here is they could be a team that wins 10 games and once again be stuck in a division with a pair of quarterbacks on teams that could easily win the MVP award.
All right, so now I'm going to ask you a follow-up question off of that. Is it a testament to Tomlin that he wins 10 games in a division with those two quarterbacks when he doesn't have those guys?
No, I don't think it is. Because wow. I think Mike's biggest flaw is that he continues to think he can try to be a 10-game winner or maybe win 11 games and figure it out and get into the single elimination tournament. And it's like he's missing the forest for the trees here. He should be trying to find a quarterback that can stack up to those guys in a true arms race. Instead, he would rather try to do it his way. And while his way might beat the Bengals once this season, might even beat the Ravens again randomly this season, I wouldn't bet on it, especially in the case of Baltimore, and it leaves them vulnerable in the playoffs. So no, like I cannot give him short-term or small-picture credit for something when I think it hurts the team's overall approach in the big picture.
You know, there are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.
I'm looking at this picture. The Savannah Bananas are coming to town. They've sold out PNC Park consecutive nights. I'm looking at the 11-foot-tall hitter hitting on stilts. How does this person have a strike zone limits? What is the strike zone? Their ankles to where? I mean, this is unbelievable. The whole thing is unbelievable to me. Like I've said a couple times over the last couple days, I had no idea that this was this popular. Are you kidding me? Two straight sellouts, tickets going for hundreds and hundreds of dollars on the secondary market. The Bananas have amassed over 10 million followers on TikTok. They're selling out football and Major League Baseball stadiums. They just played to a sellout at Clemson Stadium. Their YouTube videos have garnered more. I'm reading right out of a Post-Gazette story, by the way. Garnered more than a billion combined views. I've never seen a game. I've seen some clips. Let me tell you about some things that are happening before we get to a local player who's going to be in these games on Friday and Saturday. Limits, you tell me if you like this rule. You ready?
All right, let's hear it.
Stepping out of the batter's box is a strike and bunting is banned. If a hitter bunts, he's ejected.
I actually kind of like that. Especially stepping out of the batter's box.
Batters can steal first base on any pitch, especially a wild pitch or a pass ball, and there are no walks.
Now, how does that work?
I don't know. We can ask our next guest coming up here. Mound visits not allowed, and here's my favorite one. And this is brilliant because we just had Mark Cabali on yesterday, and he said his kids are just, you know, so excited to see this. What's more exciting than catching a foul ball, right? I'm convinced if you told, you know, 20,000 baseball fans or just people, forget about baseball fans, hey, you can come to the ballpark tomorrow night, we're going to hit bunches of foul balls and you can catch them, $10 each, $20 each, they'd show up. We all love that. This takes it to a new level here.
Oh, a huge new level.
When fans catch a foul ball, it counts as an out. So you're literally part of the game.
Yeah, you are.
And these are, despite all the antics and fun, they're actually competitive games that the Bananas sometimes lose. So the whole thing is completely amazing to me. Let's bring on Ryan Cox from Hopewell. He's the team's shortstop and the all-time leader in trick plays. Ryan, thanks for joining us, man. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course. You're on the Sullivan Super Service Fan Hotline, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Yourself and Alex Ziegler, a Butler native, Butler High School grad, and he balances a bat on his face, and among other tricks. How did you get involved with this, and was it already big when you did, Ryan, or has it just taken off recently? You're talking to somebody, maybe this is a good thing, who has no idea what you guys are all about.
So when I got done playing here in Washington with the Wild Things, I had wanted to coach. So I started making baseball content for kids to try to learn online because they're spending a lot of time on their phones or on YouTube. And Jesse saw a video of me doing what is now trick plays and sent me my tryout invite.
Who did
that? They had begun. Jesse Cole.
Who's that?
That's our owner.
Okay.
And so when we first started, they had already done some of these fun antics in Collegiate Summer Bowl in the Coastal Plains League. So they're adding fun stuff into regular baseball. But when I got down there, it was the second or third time that they had started doing banana ball. So being a part of some of the inaugural tours and seeing it grow from minor league stadiums to big league stadiums and, you know, played in some football fields this year has been really incredible.
How big were the crowds, Ryan, when you started? And what do you think the key is to all this? What are people captivated by?
When we first started, it was, you know, the good minor league ballparks, 5,000, 7,000, maybe 10,000. And we worked our way up to 81,000 fans here at Clemson Football Stadium this year, which was insane for one game. But I think the biggest thing that people relate to when you come to the ballpark is being your best inner child. Whether you're a young kid or, you know, you're a parent or grandparent, when you come to the ballpark, you just get to put all the worldly stuff aside and listen to the music and have fun, watch guys perform, watch some tricks on a baseball field you've never seen. I think our outfielders are the most talented people we got, being able to catch a ball, doing a backflip, and just adding fun to a show where we all love baseball. Now let's put that energy and put that fun into it, and fans really seem to connect with it.
Ryan, I'm curious, with the trick plays, how do you make sure that you perfect your craft, make sure they work to perfection, and what happens if there's an occasion where they don't? How do you try to play it off?
So that's been a learning point, but when I was going through my young baseball career, I had a lot of fun practicing on my own. So after I did the normal reps, you'd always try to add something in for fun. Jack Wilson's my favorite player, and he'd jump, and he'd catch that line drive, and he'd end up turning backwards, or Brandon Phillips, Brandon Crawford, they do some cool flips. So being able to add basketball into it, which is a lot of the moves I do, dribbling the ball or, you know, going between my legs, has been a real fun challenge. We've got it pretty down pat, but just like everything, you make errors. I mean, baseball players make errors. I still think my trick play percentage is, you know, definitely over 900 as far as execution. And I think it's a good example for kids to see, too. If I do fail, like, you're not putting your head down. You're right into the next play. You're ready for the next pitch, because sometimes when you make that error, you're afraid of the next play. And here, I'm just ready to rip the next trick.
So basically, the obvious comparison would be to call you guys the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball, right?
Yes and no. I heard you saying before, our games are, from a baseball standpoint, not scripted. It's very hard to throw 95 wherever you want it or throw a good breaking ball, and it's definitely very hard to hit a home run every time up to the plate. So you see a bunch of guys really competing for the game. We lose sometimes, we win sometimes. Just being able to add a little bit of flair to the normal baseball moves, whether it's a behind-the-back flip on a double play or, like I said, our outfielders doing something crazy, we do add a little bit of the tricks like the Globetrotters, but we're not playing the Generals.
Is the pay good?
Yeah, they're taking care of us. We like to say that, you know, we're getting taken care of just about the same, if not better, than every minor league baseball player. we get to come to all these cities, interact with these fans, being able to just engage in the community. A lot of times you go to a baseball game and you pray that you get an autograph or a foul ball. And here in Banana Land, it's encouraged. You know, we're going to spend probably more time signing and engaging with the fans than we are on the baseball field. And that's really something that I think the kids enjoy, because it gives them hope. When they go home, it's like, oh, you know, 10 bananas signed my baseball. I should probably go outside and work on my game. Or, you know, I got a photo with my favorite player. And a lot of times you don't get that opportunity.
Ryan Cox from a Raccoon Township native and a Hopewell grad. He is the shortstop and all-time leader in trick plays for the Savannah Bananas. And this thing has just taken off to unbelievable proportions, to where they're selling out PNC Park Friday and Saturday night, and tickets are going for crazy amounts of people wanting to get in. This is truly a phenomenon. Limits?
Your nickname, Ryan, is the Glove Magician. I find it fascinating because you're a Pittsburgh native. What it's going to be like for you being able to hear that over the PA system, standing on the field at PNC Park where you grew up going to games?
Yeah, I always imagined being the successor to Jack Wilson. So being able to see this ballpark packed out, have, you know, hundreds of my friends and family and kids that I coached in town to see us play this game. Friday night, I'll have a cool walk out where I'll be able to kind of soak in the moment and play some Pittsburgh music and really kind of take in the crowd for, you know, what feels like 25 years of hard work in baseball for me to get to this point. But honestly, it's just, I think the players that we bring in here, they're some of the best in the world at what they do. And being able to put on a good show for my friends and family in this city means everything.
How do you guys travel, Ryan? And where you stay in nice places? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I flew in a little early. My parents' wedding anniversary was on Sunday, so I got to be home for that. Then ran a couple camps up in the Cranberry-Wexford area. Got to go to Dick's Sporting Goods House of Sport. They got us staying right over the bridge here. We got a beautiful view of the city all around, some good eating. Took my friends up to Mount Washington and the original Primanti brothers, and really just got to dive into the city culture, because everyone I brought up here, Ziggy was here too, but everyone else that we brought up had never been to the city before. So seeing their reaction to the beautiful weather we're having this week and all the cool places to eat, the best view in all of baseball. Like, this is the coolest park that we've been to, especially in my opinion, but just being able to see their reactions to how great this city is one of one.
Now, with more than a billion combined views on YouTube and all the social media and the sellouts, are you starting to become recognized, or could you go to, I don't know, you know, Minneapolis or Boston and walk through a mall completely unrecognized still?
I think I could get away with it. The only thing, I dye my hair every so often, so I'll have a crazy hairstyle. Right now I have the Steelers logo in there.
Yes.
For being at home. So sometimes that tips it off. But our big guys, we got a lot of guys with massive social media following. My best friend Jackson plays second base for us. He has 2 million on TikTok. He gets recognized everywhere he goes. Our third baseman, KJ, he's just out of this world blowing up this year, an incredible human being. He gets recognized. Coach Rack gets recognized. So it's getting to a point where it's becoming pretty cool going through the airport or going to the grocery store. But I did have a really cool moment. I went to golf out in Rolling Acres in Beaver Falls with my high school friend, and I was walking past the putting green, and some guy goes, "Hey, you playing the Savannah Bananas?" So that was pretty cool being back in my hometown, and some people that I haven't met before had been paying attention to what we're doing.
This has been a really quick rise for the Bananas over the last 4 or 5 years, Ryan. What do you think's next? How far can this thing go?
We like to say we're going to take it to the moon. Jesse is such an inspiration in the way that we go about our business of trying to give fans a great experience. I think as long as we continue to put the fans first, we can take it to wherever we want, whether it's maybe coming back and playing over across the street at the Steelers Stadium next year and then coming back to the Pirates Field, or maybe we'll take it international, who knows. But Jesse definitely has a lot of plans for us, and I'm excited to see what he rolls out next year.
I wonder if we would get to the point where you guys get a television contract, that type of thing, and also if you're, and maybe you already do you play other teams who play the game the same way you do, or do they all play it straight?
So we have a 4-team league that all play the same way. Party Animals, Firefighters, and Tailgaters are the three other teams.
Did you say the Party Animals?
Yes, the Party Animals. They like went that. On their own headlining tour this year.
I bet
some
they
really
did.
Cool college stadiums, LSU, Mississippi State, to name a few. But all play by the same rules. All are trying to rip trick plays. They have their own walk-ups. We're really, really building the league out. And then next year we'll have two more teams join the league. So we'll have six teams total. And the goal is to create this banana ball league where we can take our show all over the country. So one weekend, the Bananas may be playing another team in this city. The Party Animals are in this city. The Tailgaters are in this city. And more fans are getting to come to the ballpark than they would before.
Is there a lot of competition? Do they have tryouts every year? Is everybody's job pretty much safe? What's the deal with all that? There got to be people who really want to play.
Yeah, so when I first started, tryouts were a little more open, a lot bigger. Now it's a very private invite. We've hosted events in Vanderbilt. We had a tryout down there this year. We had a tryout in Arizona. We may have a tryout in California. So they're putting tryouts out all over the country. Our coaches are going out and scouting, whether it's guys right out of college, guys coming out of indie ball, pro ball. We got some really talented people. The Party Animals have a former first-round draft pick on their team. One of my teammates spent almost a 10-year with the Rockies and their minor league system. You know, you got guys throwing mid to upper 90s. You got guys who can hit balls 450 feet. I mean, really true baseball players that just missed their shot at the big leagues but have really found a great home here in banana ball.
Ryan Cox, Hopewell grad, a couple more minutes with him as we get ready for the Savannah Bananas in front of two sold-out crowds at PNC Park Friday and Saturday night. You mentioned true baseball players. Here's my question, and I hope I phrase it the right way here. There are a lot of baseball purists out there. I'm sure people in Major League Baseball take note when you guys sell out their stadiums when sometimes their own teams don't. First, do you have any mixed feelings about playing this kind of baseball? Are you a baseball purist of any kind? And do you hear criticism from baseball purists, Ryan?
Yeah, I would like to say I grew up a very true baseball purist. I mean, we're driving to my tournament and we're listening, you know, to the Pirates game on the radio. My dad, through and through, he was there for the We Are Family teams, and we really – still, in our heart, in our purest, we grew up on baseball traditionalism. So when we come to these parks, we're really respecting the history and the tradition. We've had the opportunity to bring out former MLB guys to come play with us in their cities and watch them get the ovation they deserved for what they did. In a market like Pittsburgh, you're playing 81 games at home. So it's kind of an unfair comparison to say, hey, you know, we sold out these two nights and, you know, these guys aren't selling out every game, where, you know, we only have two opportunities to be here. So It's a blessing to be able to pack it out. But yeah, baseball purists, especially in the beginning, had a lot to say with, you know, the rules or dancing on the baseball field or doing things that, you know, your coach would tell you to knock off if you were at practice. But in reality, we're all just kids playing the game. Like, this is the best version of the outdoor wiffle ball that we're playing, and we just get to do it in front of a sold out crowd. So as we continue to go, while we hear the baseball purists, and obviously we want to respect all tradition, we are very happy in our own lane, and we watch some of those baseball purists hop on board, and really, after they've seen the show and seen the talent, the work that we put in, have accepted banana ball and accepted as a part to help the kids grow the game.
What do you sense Major League Baseball thinks of all this? That you guys are something, at least in small ways, to copy? Do they consider you competition in some way? What about all that?
I know Jesse and them, that like they've had good conversations before. We've had like cool crossover moments. I think our best view is being able to exist in both worlds. We know that the professionalism of Major League Baseball is something that even now in the clubhouse, you know, we're watching baseball every day. We're paying attention to our favorite teams. You know, we're watching this postseason stretch. You know, we care about the All-Star game. You have guys who will go to the Derby and go to the All-Star game and support. So the best thing I think we can be is, in the city of bridges, be a bridge to connect all aspects of baseball, where it's like, yeah, I might love Paul Skenes and the Pirates, but when I go outside and have fun, like I'm practicing being a banana, because at 14 years old, you're not a professional. You know, as much as you want to be Paul Skenes, you still got to fall in love with the game. So I think being a bridge to connect young fans to the sport that we all love is ideal.
Well, we have a, you mentioned wiffle ball. My friend here, Austin Bechtold, runs his own wiffle ball league. He's a hell of a wiffle ball player. Limits, I wonder if you could get a tryout out of this.
Yes? I'd love to know. We actually played our all-star game at Wild Things Park this year, Ryan.
That's awesome. We had a guy that came in from wiffle ball, and he came in, joined one of the banana ball teams here, and has brought some of the pitching styles and the fun that he found in wiffle ball too here. So, I mean, it's always a possibility. We've had guys come from, pure baseball backgrounds to other sports skills. We got guys who have acrobatic talents. Best thing is just, send that message to them. Look for that tryout invite and just keep posting videos. I think a lot of times you get content seen online and sometimes that'll spark a tryout invite.
Are they looking for a very average athlete that also can double as a broadcaster and can talk pretty well?
There you go. I like that.
You never know around here. We have all walks of the show. We have players that do on-field promotions and microphone stuff, crowd work. Our broadcast team is built of a bunch of guys who bananas. They worked at MLB Network prior. We got some guys from the Big 12 scene. We have a bunch of our announcers really have a character in themselves. So being able to broadcast and come in and pitch, I think you might be able to find a spot.
Unbelievable. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us, and I know people are very fired up to see this weekend, and good luck with everything.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right.
There are a lot of passions. Some days it's sports, other days it's cooking or music, or just diving into a great documentary. The thing is, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. Amazon Prime isn't just about fast delivery. Though getting stuff the same day is pretty great. But it turns out it's so much more. Prime Video, Amazon Music, the whole range of services. It's like a hub for all kinds of curiosity. Prime helps people stay connected to what matters and keeps the journey of exploration going. Whether it's watching something inspiring, listening to a new artist, or getting gear delivered fast to chase a new hobby, Prime makes it easier to dive in. So yeah, whatever you're into, it's on Prime. From streaming to shopping, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever sparks interest. Amazon.com/Prime.